I'm Heather Vale, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Irene Bustamante Adams, Deputy Director and Chief Strategy Officer for Workforce Connections, and Alexandra Rosen, Senior Director of Venture Forward at GoDaddy. And the two organizations have partnered for the upcoming Micro Business Summit at Las Vegas City Hall. Thank you both so much for being here today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Okay, so first of all, what exactly is a micro business?
Sure. So micro business is a business with fewer than 10 employees. And GoDaddy's Venture Forward Research Initiative looks at the data around them, specifically around the ones who have an active website and a domain as well.
Okay, so what are some examples of micro businesses so that we can kind of picture what you're talking about?
Sure. I can name an example in Las Vegas. There is, for example, Maui Wowie Shaved Ice. It could be anyone who, again, has fewer than 10 employees and either sells services, offers bookings. They can have a brick and mortar presence, or they could just be online. So it could be skincare, stores, bakeries, anybody really.
What about solopreneurs and freelancers?
Yes, absolutely. More than half are actually solo entrepreneurs of who we study and look at and we see in micro businesses.
Nice. Okay. Now, why are micro businesses important to our local economy?
We know that the small business platform here in Las Vegas supports the local economy. We know that they are the bread and butter. And so during the pandemic, we had an upswing of people who were laid off and then decided to invest in themselves and start their side gig or their side hustle, whatever you want to call it. And now we know through the research from GoDaddy that the Southern Nevada region has just exploded with micro businesses. So we want to invest in them and giving them the resources to help them grow if they're ready or B, to get started, or just learn more about the GoDaddy platform that can assist them in their day-to-day operations.
Okay, so you've got this free event coming up at the end of February called the Micro Business Summit. What is the summit all about?
Well, we have in this region, we pay a lot of attention to small to medium businesses. You've seen that in the Super Bowl host committee that developed those businesses to be able to pitch to larger scale ventures. But this region is so rich with micro businesses. We want to invest in those because we know that if they want to grow or stay at zero, that we want them to be the best that they can be at where they are. And knowing how to navigate to where the resources are available, such as funding or business licensing, half the battle is knowing that kind of information so that you can continue to grow.
Okay, so what are some of the topics that will be covered at the Micro Business Summit?
So we actually surveyed the micro businesses because Las Vegas is actually number two after New York City when it comes to just the density. There's about 28 per 100 people. And so we surveyed and found out that top challenges are access to capital, establishing a successful online presence and doing online marketing, and business licensing. So that's what informed a lot of the topics that will be available and customized to them.
And just to add, Heather, we have some top leaders in each one of those segments that will give information to the attendees at the event.
Okay, and who are some of the speakers who will be addressing the crowd?
Sure. So some of our sponsors, right, are Bank of Nevada, and we will have the vice president of their division giving information, Mr. Lamont. And then we also have the Access CDFI, Nick Steele. So the Access CDFI is one of the funding events that attends to this market because not every bank focuses on micro businesses. And then in addition, we will have the SBA talk about what they do for micro businesses. That's on the funding side. We have Miss Amy, who is from GoDaddy, who will focus on how to use your GoDaddy platform to maximize your business if you're not already doing it. And then top leaders from Clark County, Henderson, North Las Vegas, and the City of Las Vegas from their business licensing division will be on hand as part of the panel.
Wow, awesome. Okay. Now, Alexandra, you mentioned that the density of microbusinesses in Las Vegas is second in the country next to New York, which is crazy. But besides that little fun fact, why was this event specifically brought to Las Vegas?
The reason was because we were so inspired when we met Workforce Connections. Honestly, when we saw how fertile the ground is in Las Vegas for entrepreneurship and shared that with Irene and team, and the partnership that arose and the aligned goal of better understanding and supporting the people there, this event just organically unfolded as to come together and create, again, a curated event that's specific for the needs of these teeny micro businesses who, while they fit in the small business category, are really distinct and unique in their needs and who they are.
Yeah, because small business can include hundreds of employees, which to me isn't small, but I mean, technically that's the definition, right? So
that's exactly right. And so a lot of times these entrepreneurs, they don't think the same way. They, again, as we mentioned, could be operating out of their home. They could be operating out of a storefront. They are figuring it out as they go. And they really have a passion for their business. We know the top reasons they start are because they want to be their own boss and because they are passionate about a hobby and they want to contribute to their community or gain flexibility, among other reasons. So we know it, they could be anywhere from wanting to stay small to become very large. And they don't necessarily have the time because they're so small to figure out how to do everything. So that's why it's so important to get them to the right resources and help, so they can focus on running their business and not being an expert in accounting and marketing and business licensing.
Yeah, exactly. So what sort of specific learnings will guests be able to take back and apply to their micro businesses or side hustles, or even if they're a future potential entrepreneur, things that they can use to launch and build that business?
Well, from the funding side, Heather, not all banks or financial institutions lend to this market. And so on the panel, when it says access to capital, there are some financial institutions that do lend. It could be 1,000, it could be up to 5,000 or more. And so they will learn what is required from that financial institution to be able to receive funding to expand your idea. On the second panel, the speaker from GoDaddy will share, I thought I knew how to utilize the GoDaddy platform, but what other techniques do I not know in order to utilize that platform to its fullest? And so she will share that information. Our keynote speaker will share the data to inspire that we are the mecca for micro businesses when it comes to the Southern Nevada. And so who else is in that space? We know that there's more women and people that are in a certain age group that are thriving in this area. And so being able to network with those other individuals is a plus. And then just lastly, in business licensing, it sometimes is so confusing in this state because you have to be registered in local jurisdictions in order to be legally recognized. And so what are the nuances to make sure that you stay in compliance and can actually expand and thrive in this area? Those are the kind of things that they'll learn.
I'd love to add also, one of our high level takeaways we'd love for them to have is that while they might be a micro business, their impact is just so major. Our research shows that they create jobs, 7 for every 1 micro business entrepreneur in a county. They drive up household incomes. During the pandemic, they reduced unemployment. So supporting them, their impact is not just the nice thing to do. It's also just a win-win all around. So we hope that they walk away feeling inspired and important because they really are to the community and the local economy.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Okay, so now we know some of what's included at the event, but when and where exactly is it happening?
Sure. Well, we were very fortunate that the city of Las Vegas stepped up and supported this effort. So it'll be at City Hall in the Council of Chambers. It opens at 9 and ends at 1. It is at no cost to the attendee, but we do require registration. And you could come in to just for the resource fair if you don't have time for the speakers. But it is an event that you have to register for, and we're just excited to be able to bring it to Southern Nevada.
Okay, awesome. So where can listeners go if they want to, first of all, find out more information, and secondly, register to attend the event?
To attend the event, you could go to our registration. It's bit.ly/MBSummitLV for registration, or you could go to our Workforce Connections website, workforceconnections.org.
Okay, perfect. So once again, the Micro Business Summit is happening on Saturday, February 24th from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Las Vegas City Hall Council of Chambers. It's free for entrepreneurs with fewer than 10 employees, but you do need to register in advance. So you can either do that through the Workforce Connections website, which is at workforceconnections.org. workforceconnections.org, or you can go straight to the registration page, bit.ly/MBSummitLV, bit.ly/MBSummitLV. And we've been speaking with Irene Bustamante Adams. She's the Deputy Director and Chief Strategy Officer for Workforce Connections, as well as Alexandra Rosen. She's the Senior Director of Venture Forward at GoDaddy. And I want to thank both of you so much for being here and letting us know about this event, and especially some facts and figures around the micro business economy here in Las Vegas. It's been absolutely fascinating talking to you and learning all about this. And it sounds like a fantastic event for entrepreneurs. So I appreciate you being here and sharing with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Heather.
Thank you.
Retirement can be scary, but only if you're not prepared. That's why AARP created thisispretirement.org. Because unless you've already retired, you're in pretirement and you still have time to plan. Learn about retirement savings options, potential tax breaks, and how you can build savings over time. Visit thisispretirement.org for free resources to help you customize your action plan and feel the retirement fear disappear. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
I'm Heather Vail, and you're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is YT Bell, Senior Director of And Still I Vote, which is a campaign of the Leadership Conference Education Fund, and also Bree Spencer, Senior Program Director of Justice Reform. With primaries this week, it's a perfect time to consider how we can make a difference. Thank you both so much for being here today.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Okay, so YT, what exactly is And Still I Vote?
Well, that's a great question. So And Still I Vote is a campaign of the Leadership Conference Education Fund. And what it does is the campaign recognizes the power that we, the majority, the people of the country, the new American majority has. And right now, the new American majority consists of younger folks, individuals of color, and they make up about 64% of the electorate. And so through this campaign, we have an opportunity to illustrate our power, because we hold the power to make the changes for our community. And so the campaign aims to encourage individuals 18 to 35 with an emphasis on women of color to show up for their communities and wield that power and recognize and realize the real promise of our democracy. And so we're doing that in 11 states throughout this campaign to educate, persuade, and mobilize individuals 18 to 35, because they'll make up majority of the electorate in this 2024 election.
Okay. Do you find that young people from 18 to 35 typically don't go out to vote if they're not encouraged?
Well, what we do know is that in 2020, there was a significant amount of individuals that were eligible and registered to vote that didn't show up. And right now, young people feel disillusioned with the fact that our government is not delivering on issues that matter to them. And so through the And Still I Vote campaign, we're empowering them to take action now based off the issues that they care about. And through our message testing, we know that they care about justice reform. We know that they care about reproductive health and healthcare as a whole and education. And so we're trying to re-engage them to be a part of this movement, to meet this moment, to actually be a part of our democracy by turning out to vote, to help us ensure that our leaders look like us and respect our values.
Okay, so what strategies does the campaign use in order to get these young voters, especially young voters of color, out to make their voice count?
Yeah, so that's a great question. We actually use issues. So we don't focus on candidates at all. We focus on issues that motivate young folks and that they care about to turn out. And so, as I mentioned, young people, based off our testing, really, really care about justice reform. And my colleague Bree will talk more about that shortly. But a lot of these individuals started voting in 2016 and 2020, and they were a part of some of the demonstrations and part of some of the protests. And they really want to ensure that our communities are fairly treated and that it's not profit over people. The other thing is they care about education as a whole. A lot of them, from our testing, associate education with economic viability. And then also reproductive health care. They want to have the freedoms that our ancestors have fought so hard for, and just the choice over their body, over the books that they read, over their communities, and over their lives. Just on those issues in order to educate them to turn out. But we also utilize the communities that they're in and the friendships that they hold. Because the real honest truth is individuals are more influenced by people that they trust. So that relational organizer is a huge key factor of the campaign. But we also do a lot of listening. We don't want to compel our views on them, but we want to get insight from them and then educate them on how that issue is actually on the ballot and the importance of picking and voting for individuals down the ballot that represent their values to move on those issues that they care about.
Yeah, okay. So, Bree, what are some of the issues that are important to young people when it comes to justice reform?
Young people are very concerned about things like police accountability, about mass incarceration. If you're 18 to 35 in the United States, you've never lived in this country when there wasn't a raging war on drugs. And we know the war on drugs is inextricably linked with mass incarceration. People are fed up with a criminal justice system that does not reflect their values, that isn't fair, that punishes poor people and, you know, provides additional options and outs for people with money. We also know that there's massive issues of disparity in the targeting of Black and Brown communities, particularly at the front end of the criminal legal system with policing, but it shows up throughout the entire system as well. So I just want to really amplify what YT just said, which I couldn't agree more with, which is justice is on the ballot every single time you go to the ballot box. And sometimes it's on the ballot in ways that people don't realize. A lot of folks realize, you know, there's judges, there's district attorneys, but there are ways that other positions that you vote for locally and on up at the state level and on up to the federal level impact justice that people might not think about. For example, your common council member, they're the legislative body of most cities and actually are the ones who will drive change and reform at the ordinance level. Same with the mayor. They often appoint the police chief. And as somebody who works in national civil rights around criminal legal reform, but also local oversight of police and fire, I can tell you unequivocally that who your police chief is has a huge impact on whether your department is going to listen to the community it's serving, whether or not they're open-minded and willing to change and address some of the concerns of the community. And we want people to know that when they go in to vote.
Okay, so then what kind of research should people do on candidates in terms of figuring out how it relates to issues important to them and which candidates they should put their vote behind?
Well, so they should first figure out or think through with their kitchen cabinet or the trusted members of their family and friends that they care about to figure out what is that issue that they totally care about that also intersects with other issues. And then from there, there are tons of organizations across the country that actually do voter guides on candidates where they can see their voting history, but also see their platform for the issues that they said that they're going to prioritize. And so, you know, you can pull your sample ballot before the election. You can pull it anytime you choose to kind of figure out who's actually on your ballot, because based off where you reside, it could be different candidates as you go further down the ballot. And so looking at those candidates, looking at their platform issue, and then also doing some research on their background. Like, do they have other skill sets? Are they a social worker? Do they come from other walks of life that give them another perspective that's necessary to make and be a good decision maker? And I think that the individuals starting there and then also just relying on those trusted messengers and organizations in their community to rely on about the candidates and looking at their voter guide is going to be very imperative this election.
Okay. So obviously voting for the right candidates has a big impact. But, you know, we've talked about the issues, but what can we do to implement solutions to these problems? Is it as simple as just voting for the right candidates, or is there more that we can do beyond that?
So you want to make sure that you're voting, but you also want to make sure that you're also educating other folks as to why you're voting. To understand there, the other things that can be done is to do and look into your community and figure out where the disparities are. Where are the challenges in your community that you want to be fixed? And then also figuring out who has the actual purview in order to fix those. To my colleague Bree's point, I don't think a lot of individuals know the power that is held from the state legislators and also to some of the local leaders. But understanding that infrastructure and roads, if you are very concerned with those, are handled at your local city council, and they have purview and funding to fix those, that's where you should start and show up. I think the other thing that individuals can do outside of voting is to be a part of the process. There are tons of committees and councils and advisory councils that individuals can be on right now, or just showing up to the meetings to hear what's being said, to hearing the solutions, and then also applying to get on some of these advisory councils and commissions to actually create the solutions that individuals want to see. In addition to that, canvassing your neighborhood, talking about, hey, just the basic information that there's an election coming up, there are primaries that are coming up, so that people will know. Because when we look at research, a lot of folks say, hey, I didn't show up to an election because I didn't realize it was one. So that's that small touch of bringing awareness to an election coming up and talking about the issues that matter are quintessential. I think the other thing is trying to make sure that there are no barriers to getting access to the ballot box. Educating people on, hey, you don't always have to vote in person, that you can vote by mail, which makes it more accessible and more attainable for people to actually illustrate their vote. So there are a couple of things. You can educate your community. You can become a poll worker, because there's shortages, quite frankly, across the country that we're seeing, where if you want to ensure that elections are fair and equal for everybody, no matter where you stay in your zip code, then you will be a part of the process by actually becoming a poll worker. The other thing is making sure that you're working with the organizations that you trust to educate even more folks, but even showing up to meetings. You're a constituent in your community, so you have the ability to show up, to ask questions, and then also you can just set up meetings, quite frankly, with your local elected, your state elected leaders, and your federal leaders to figure out what they're doing and what they're not doing, and then you advise them what you want to see done to hold them accountable.
Okay, awesome advice. All right, so where can listeners go if they want to get more information or get involved in the And Still I Vote campaign?
Yeah, they can go to AND, Still, STILL, I, like the letter I, Vote, VOTE.org. And they can also go to Vision for Justice, Vision, VISION, for, FOR, Justice, JUSTICE. org to see some of those recommendations on justice reform, because as we know, and as I've mentioned, and as my colleague has mentioned, Bree, that justice is on the ballot. And so we want to make sure that folks get all the information about how to turn out to vote, but also recommendations on how to create more justice reform initiatives throughout their community.
Perfect. Okay. So andstillivote.org is the website to go to if you want to find out more information about the And Still I Vote campaign. It's a campaign of the Leadership Conference Education Fund, andstillivote.org. And if you want to find out more about justice reform specifically and the recommendations, visionforjustice.org, vision for, spelled out, F-O-R, visionforjustice.org. And we've been speaking with YT Bell and Bree Spencer. They're from the Leadership Conference Education Fund, specifically YT's with the And Still I Vote campaign and Bree's with Justice Reform. And we've been talking about some of the important issues that people can vote on to make a difference in the primaries coming up. So I want to thank you both so much for being here and sharing with us this campaign and what people can do to make a difference. I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Heather. Yeah, thank you, Heather, for having us.
Hey you, stop and listen. This is a public service announcement with Dakari Chapman. Why should you know your constitution and why should you know your rights as a U.S. citizen? How would you like it if someone didn't allow your club to meet at your house? I wouldn't, because that's not cool. How would you like to be tried without a jury? I wouldn't, because that's not cool. These things are not cool. Learn your rights as a U.S. citizen so you know what to do in these situations. Thanks for listening. And remember, it's an American thing, so learn it.
Liberty. It's an American thing. From AmericanThing.org.
You're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm Heather Vail, and I'm speaking with Emily Kaufman, a travel journalist better known as the Travel Mom. This is the time of year that many people do their vacation planning, and Emily knows all about the current travel trends. Emily, thank you so much for being here today.
I'm happy to be with you.
So what should we know before booking a vacation for 2024?
Well, there are so many travel trends. We're a month into the new year, and some of the things that we're seeing are people are traveling for special events, things like the solar eclipse coming up, people going to Paris for the Olympics. And according to a travel trend survey by Hilton, they're saying that the number one reason people are traveling is to rest and recharge. So it's important to know that there are all these trends going on with travel, but it's important to be aware that no matter what reason you're traveling for, it matters where you stay, because a lousy hotel stay can ruin the entire experience.
Yeah, for sure. So now when it comes to both attending special events and traveling to rest and recharge, what are some of the popular destinations for this year?
You know, last year we saw a huge uptick in international travel, specifically to Europe. And we're going to continue to see Europe really hitting hard. Of course, there are always the traditional places every year. Orlando is incredibly popular, New York, Los Angeles, the bigger cities. And a lot of people are looking to get to the Caribbean and Mexico because that's the place to truly rest and relax.
Okay, yeah. So basically lounging on a beach is one of the top choices. But then when we're talking about Europe, it's probably, you know, seeing all the great art galleries and that kind of thing.
Yep, and lounging on a beach is just right up my alley. I do enjoy the sightseeing, but so many people are interesting in relaxation. And you know, a great way to do that is with all-inclusive. I love an all-inclusive vacation because it takes so much worry away. You get your accommodations, you get your meals, your activities, even your alcoholic beverages. I'm the travel mom, and I spent so much time traveling with my children. And sometimes going to dinner or breakfast with them could be challenging. You know, resorts can be expensive, but the all-inclusive helps you stick to a price point and eliminates so much worry. Say you have a picky eater in your group, they don't like something they ordered, you can order something else and you're not always reaching into your pocket. I love that activities are included. There's gorgeous beaches at all of these. And I think all-inclusive vacations are such a fabulous way, whether you're looking for a romantic escape, maybe a girl's getaway, a bachelorette party, or traveling with a family. I think they're a great way to go.
Yeah, now all-inclusive sounds appealing, but I don't usually think of all-inclusive as being the budget option or the more cost-effective option. So how do we keep costs down and pick a package that works if we're traveling on a budget?
Well, all-inclusive is a way to stick to your price point because it's all included. You're not reaching into your pocket. However, with Hilton, there are so many brands across the board. I'm a new grandmother. I love the Embassy Suites brand because you get two rooms to spread out. You have a complimentary cook-to-order breakfast. You have a manager's reception in the afternoon, which includes cocktails and snacks. So there's a lot of ways to get a whole bunch of bang for your vacation buck.
Okay, awesome. So now you mentioned traveling with different generations. And if we do that, and it seems to be one of the travel trends that's happening a lot, how do you make a vacation that appeals to family members of all ages?
That's a great question, as I've just taken a couple of those. In fact, we stayed at Delray Beach, which was perfect because it was right at the beach with a fabulous pool area. I think it's so important to know the audience that's traveling. Are you beach people? Are you people that want to get out there and sightsee and hustle and bustle? I think you've got to pick a perfect location to define your wonderful multi-generation family vacation. And something important that I've learned is you got to be clear ahead of time. Are grandma and grandpa there to babysit? Or are they going to take care of the kids one night so mom and dad can get out? I think expectations are really important to manage when it comes to a multi-generation vacation.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so where can listeners go if they want to find out more information about travel options in 2024?
Hilton.com is a great place to turn to. It lists all of the different brands that they've got across the board. You can go somewhere that really helps you stick to a price point, or you can go all the way up to a Conrad or a Waldorf for a very special occasion. I also have social media at The Travel Mom on Facebook and Instagram, and I answer every single question that comes in. I'm not a travel agent, but I've been traveling with my family for about 25 years now. So I've got a lot of experience and happy to help guide you in any way I can.
Awesome. Okay. So Hilton.com, if you want to find out some of the different vacation options for this year. And if you want to follow Emily, we've been talking with Emily Kaufman. She's better known as the Travel Mom. So she is on social media, Facebook and Instagram at The Travel Mom. That's MOM at The Travel Mom. And you can ask Emily any questions you have about travel. Emily, I want to thank you so much for being here and sharing with us some of the travel trends and some tips for traveling in 2024. I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Great chatting with you.
Every child deserves a safe, loving, and permanent home. Help the Dave Thomas Foundation for Adoption find families for children who've lingered in foster care the longest. Learn more at DaveThomasFoundation.org.
I'm Heather Vail, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Aggie Lal, travel influencer, certified health coach, and best-selling author of InstaTravel and Biohack Like a Woman. Aggie, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me. Good morning.
Okay, so your latest book is called Biohack Like a Woman. Now, what exactly is biohacking?
Biohacking literally means hacking your biology. So biohackers are just a bunch of people that love feeling amazing. They hate feeling bad. So we figure out how to adjust our diet and lifestyle and environment so we can just feel that way all the time, every day.
Okay. And is it safe?
Absolutely. Yes. I mean, oh my God. Yes. I think this is the only way to live, you know, just to feel healthy. And yeah, I love it.
Okay, so what are some examples of what you would do to biohack yourself into being more healthy, whether that's having more energy or just feeling better all around?
You know, I start with my diet, with movement, and I also recently just explored Lila Quantum Tech, and this is how I shift negative energy. So after I've been biohacking for years and years and years, I realized like there's only so much that diet and lifestyle can change. And so I just started discovering quantum energy. And I have to say that, you know, we are surrounded by EMFs, you know, cell phones and 5G and microwave. And sometimes I just felt really tired and nauseous and I was doing everything right. There was this missing piece, right? And these are all the things, these electromagnetic field devices that we can't really see. But when you open your phone and see how many Wi-Fi you can connect to, you know, we're feeling this as a body. And so that's what I have been discovering recently.
Okay, so basically you're saying there's technology that can counteract the electromagnetic fields that are bombarding us from all directions all the time?
Correct. And so quantum energy is nothing new. You know, we've known about it for thousands of years. Now we have the science to explain it. It's just basically a science of tiny things. And companies like Lila are figuring out ways to almost package it, you know, and being able to condense it into blocks. So that helps eliminate negative effects of EMFs. And for example, charge things like I charge my matcha in the morning.
Okay. So how exactly does it work? Is it like grounding?
Well, I don't want to get too much into science because I'm sure, you know, it's early in the morning for a lot of viewers. I can just give you an example that there's many single and double blinded studies when they basically compare what happens to like a liquid or if you put your coffee, and they can see close up the change in the molecules when you charge your coffee with like an infinity block, which is like the most powerful block that the company offers.
Okay, cool. So you also mentioned that you can biohack using diet and movement. What are some natural foods that you would recommend, or supplements, or, you know, fitness routines?
I am a big fan of women celebrating their cycle and not doing the same thing every day. If you're not seeing results and you're cutting calories, that's because you're working out and biohacking like a man. And my whole thing is biohack like a woman. So biohack according to your cycle. That, what does it mean? For example, I'm on day 8 of my cycle. So that means I'm fasting this morning. You know, I can really push myself and not eat until midday. I'm going to have incredible effects. If I do the exact same thing closer to my period, I'm going to gain weight. So it's understanding that it's too much of a good thing can be a bad thing, and you really need to adjust different hacks and biohacks and fitness routine to your cycle if you're a woman. And even if you don't have a cycle, I would highly recommend for you to do that, because we by nature are lunar. You know, we have full moon right now. This is if you didn't sleep well last night, that totally makes sense, because that's a great sign that, you know, the full moon energy is impacting you.
Okay. And how do we figure out what is working at that particular point in our cycle and what is having the opposite effect from what we intend?
Great example is PMSing. We made it look like PMSing is completely normal. It's not. So if you feel like you want to eat a tub of ice cream or kill your husband, your hormones are out of whack. So that's a great example. You can't lose weight, or you feel like, why do I always have this, you know, that extra cushion of fat around my belly, and I'm doing everything right and I barely eat any calories? And it's not about reducing your calories. It's just adjusting your fasting, your diet, and your lifestyle to your cycle. So actually being healthy and being full of energy is just so easy.
Okay. And what about movement? What kind of fitness routine do you recommend, especially for busy women who, you know, sometimes we just don't have time to fit in a full workout?
And 100%. And guess what? All that prolonged cardio classes are probably making you put on weight. It's just too much stress on our bodies. You know, we're biologically designed to extend the species. So if you're doing a cardio for an hour, it's almost like too much stress for your body. So I'm a big fan of lifting weights 3 times a week for 20 minutes and really just try to lift as heavy as you can. I promise you're not going to look like Arnold Schwarzenegger, but it will help you build strong skeletal muscles. The more muscles you have, the easier it is going to be for you to lose weight and keep that weight off, because the strong skeletal muscles are more metabolically active, so to say. So they really burn calories for you.
Okay, awesome. So where can listeners go if they want to find out more information about biohacking for better health in general, or even get your book, Biohack Like a Woman? Because I'm assuming that you laid out a lot of this.
Yes. So you can get a book on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. You know, you can also go to leelaq.com when you want to just learn a little bit more about quantum energy and all the hacks that are biohacking leaning towards these days. So I highly recommend it. And you can just check out my account on Instagram at Aggie. And I'll be talking about more about Leela there in more detail. So I would love to have you there.
Okay, cool. So find Aggie Lal on Instagram at Aggie, super simple, A-G-G-I-E at Aggie on Instagram. If you want to get her book, Biohack Like a Woman, it's at all the major booksellers. So you can find it at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or wherever you like to buy your books. And if you want to find out more about the quantum energy wellness technology that she was talking about, leelaq.com is the website for that, leelaq.com, leelaq.com. And we've been speaking with Aggie Lal. She's a travel influencer. She's a certified health coach. And she shares a lot on her Instagram about better wellness, as well as some of her travel. So check her out at Aggie on Instagram. Thank you so much, Aggie. I really appreciate your time being here and letting us know about this.
Of course. Thank you, Heather. Thank you so much. Have a beautiful day.
The changing of seasons can affect how you feel. 1 in 5 people experience some form of depression, no matter the time of year.
At the American Psychiatric Association Foundation, our vision is to build a mentally healthy nation for all. Visit mentallyhealthynation.org to learn more.
I'm Heather Vale, and you're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Bridget Small, Consumer Education Specialist with the Federal Trade Commission, or FTC. This is Identity Theft Awareness Week, and the FTC is sharing advice and resources on how to spot, avoid, and report identity theft. Bridget, thank you so much for being here today.
Hey, thank you, Heather.
Being Identity Theft Awareness Week, what should we know about impersonator scams and identity theft?
Impersonators are cons who will call, email, contact you on social media in a variety of ways, trying to convince you that there's someone you know, either a person or a business that you know and trust, and they'll show a sense of urgency and try and get you to give up personal information or financial information. They're trying to convey a sense of urgency or build a sense of trust so that they'll get your information and they can use it to commit identity theft. They may seem to be a business that you know, an Amazon, a UPS, or your bank, and tell you that there's an urgent need for you to give up your social security number, your credit card number, even your Medicare number during Medicare open season. And they use that information to begin identity theft, which is to use your information to start getting credit or money or loans in their name.
Okay. Now, do impersonator scams always lead to identity theft?
Impersonator scams don't always lead to identity theft, but they always lead to loss for you if you share your personal or financial information. Because if you share that information, a scammer is going to use it. The scammer is going to get into your bank account, get into your credit card account, even get into your medical account and get medical care in your name, or use your name when he's arrested. So there's going to be some loss to you if you share that information. If you get any kind of unexpected contact in any form, you know, on the phone, if someone reaches out on social media and says, hey, you know, I'm a friend of a friend, let's be friends, and starts asking for personal information that a new person shouldn't, don't give that. You don't need to give that information out to someone. Nobody needs your social security number or your credit card number or your Medicare number except of very few organizations like, you know, the IRS, your employer, and your bank. But beyond that, there's just nobody that needs that information, and certainly no one who calls you out of the blue and says, hey, I need that information right away. There's an emergency.
Yeah. Okay. So as far as how they get the sensitive personal information that would allow them to steal our identity, that's information that we're giving up to them by falling for these traps. But how do they get our original, just our general phone number, email, whatever it is? Where do they get that information from?
Well, I mean, that can happen sometimes. They do trick us and steal the information right from us. But remember, too, that scammers will steal your wallet or your purse. They'll steal your mail. They'll go through your garbage. I mean, that's why it's important to shred your outgoing personal mail. They sometimes get that information in a data breach. So it's really up to us to protect our information in that way and protect them from getting our information initially, and to keep track of what's going on with our information by checking our credit reports, for example, to see if someone has stolen our information without our knowledge. You know, stolen our mail, stolen our shredded mail, or stolen our outgoing mail, and opened new accounts and is running them up with our information. And it's appearing on our credit report, but we're not getting the mail because it's going to the scammer's house, not ours.
Okay, so basically on the credit report, we would look for things like new accounts being opened that we didn't open and that sort of red flag?
Right. Checking your credit report is one of the best ways to find out what's going on with your information. You can get a free copy of your credit report every week from each of the three credit bureaus. That's Experian, TransUnion, and Equifax. And those are free if you go to annualcreditreport.com. When you check your credit report, you can look for things that, you know, that don't belong. You look for mistakes, you know, that might be in your own record, but you also look for new accounts that you didn't open, new loans, any kind of discrepancies that you know don't belong there. And then you can dispute those with the credit reporting bureaus, agencies. And that's an early warning sign of what's going on. You can also choose, as a protective measure, to put a freeze on your credit report. A credit freeze keeps people from getting into your credit report and opening new credit. Now, that does include you, but you're in control. You have the option to place and lift the freeze. So you can freeze your credit report so that no one can open new credit except for you, because you're in control of it. It's free to place and it's free to lift it. So you can do that by contacting, again, each of the three credit bureaus, Experian, TransUnion, and Equifax. And you can find out how to do that at identitytheft.gov. And you find out how to lift that when you want to lift that. You know, when you want to get credit or you want to get, you know, a job, buy insurance, do things like that, you can lift it. But that puts you in control of your credit, so no one can open credit without you being in control of it.
Yeah, okay. Now, you've given a lot of examples as to when people would not need our sensitive information. But besides that kind of spidey sense, oh, I shouldn't be asked for this, what are some ways that we can spot identity theft in the process?
Yeah, you know, you get a sense of what's supposed to be happening around you. You know, you spot the calls when somebody is asking you for information they shouldn't, or the social media messages that are weird, or, you know, the email messages that are slightly misspelled and say, you know, we need this information right away, click this link here. You don't deal with any of that. You don't respond to those unexpected out of the blue things. But you also are watching for changes in what's normal. Did you stop getting bills that you're supposed to get? Do charges appear on your credit card bills that you didn't make? Does your health insurance, you know, your explanation of benefits or your regular bill from your healthcare provider include charges for things that you didn't get? Does the IRS contact you and say there's more than one tax return filed in your name because perhaps someone misused your social security number, or you see withdrawals from your bank account that you didn't make? So it's up to us to watch for things that are out of the ordinary, and those things are signs that someone has, you know, misused our identity and our information and is taking from us.
Okay. Now, besides the obvious inconvenience, what are some of the bigger repercussions if someone does steal our identity?
Well, if they take your identity, I mean, depending on the scale of it, the most common form of identity theft that has been reported is that someone is opening a credit card in your name or getting a loan in your name. But it's up to you at that point. You've got to make that stop. You've got to report it. You've got to chase that down, and you've got to put a stop to it. That's time. That's worry. That's a financial burden on you. For example, if someone, you know, opens a credit card in your name and then you want to open a credit card or get a car or get a house, there are things on your credit report that don't belong there. And that can slow you down. That can put a stop to your, you know, your need to get money, to get a house or a loan. It can wreck your credit rating. It certainly takes your time and aggravation. You've got to prove to the, you know, the lender, the credit reporting, the credit card company that, hey, that wasn't me that did that. You can do this, but it's really on you to go through all that and to have to unwind the bad things that the scammer did to you. You can do that when you report to identitytheft.gov. You create an identity theft report, and then you get rights. You know, you get certain rights as an identity theft victim. You can contact the companies where identity theft report. You can request records to find out what happened. But again, it's on you to recover, and you can, but it takes time.
Okay. Now, does a credit card company or a lender typically believe us when we say, hey, that wasn't me that opened that? Or do people use that as an excuse so often that they're going to take it with a grain of salt and then you have to prove that it wasn't you?
I can't speak to what a credit card company or a lender would do, but I know that when you do report identity theft and you get the identity theft report, it's a law enforcement report, and you can use that when you contact the credit card company or the lender to demonstrate that you've reported identity theft and who you are, and to request to have this fixed and removed from your record.
Okay, perfect. So you did mention it a couple times, but if someone does unfortunately experience identity theft, how can they report it and then, you know, move on towards the future?
Right. If you do experience identity theft, it's really important to report it. to identitytheft.gov. That's a federal government website where you report what happened, you give some details about what happened to you, and then you'll get a personalized step-by-step plan for what you need to do next. Now, we've talked about new credit cards or loans. If you say someone opened a new credit card in my name, the plan will tell you which credit card company to contact, which forms to send. There are sample letters that you can send. It will give you the information and walk you through the steps so you can start to recover from that. So when you report to identitytheft.gov, you report the details, you get that step-by-step plan, the forms, the letters, the identity theft report you need to follow through on that and resolve the problems. And the important point is you get the identity theft report, which gives you the rights to get the information and help resolve those problems.
Perfect. Okay. So once again, identitytheft.gov is the website to go to if you unfortunately find yourself a victim of identity theft, identitytheft.gov. And if you want to get your credit reports, again, as Bridget mentioned, you can get them every week right now. annualcreditreport.com is the website to go to, and that gives you access to your credit reports from all three credit bureaus. That's Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion. So you can request one at a time. You can request all three at the same time. And once again, that's annualcreditreport.com. And Bridget, where can people find more information in general about how to protect their identity and how to avoid impersonator scams?
They can go to ftc.gov/IDtheft. And I'd like to mention that if someone does need to report identity theft, they can report in languages other than English. If someone wants to report in a language other than English or Spanish, they can call. They can call 1-877-438-4338 and then press 3 and they'll choose a language and they can make a report that way. The site is available in English and Spanish, but we've just added the feature so that people can report in any language because this is such an important feature. And the information is available online at ftc.gov/IDtheft. And that page will link you to the information in Spanish as well.
Okay, perfect. So ftc.gov/IDtheft. If you want to find out more information about identity theft, ftc.gov/IDtheft. And then if you do experience identity theft, again, identitytheft.gov, or you can call 877-438-4338. And if you press 3, you have a choice of languages, 877-438-4338. And we've been speaking with Bridget Small. She's the Consumer Education Specialist with the Federal Trade Commission, or FTC. And Bridget, I want to thank you so much for being here and letting us know more about identity theft and impersonator scams, how we can spot them, how we can avoid them, and what to do if we fall prey. So I really appreciate your time and expertise. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Heather.
So much of our lives are online today that it's hard to know if we're being scammed. Keep your online information secure with simple steps you can take today. To learn more, go to CISA at cisa.gov/secureourworld.
I'm Heather Vail with the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show, and this is your community events calendar for nonprofit initiatives and charity events around the Valley. Monday's Dark with Mark Chinook is a bi-monthly musical fundraising party at The Space, with each event raising $10,000 for a specific charity in 90 minutes. Upcoming shows include this Monday, February 5th at 8 p.m., benefiting ALS of Southern Nevada, and Monday, February 19th at 8 p.m., benefiting CORE. Get tickets or find out more details at mondaysdark.com. That's mondaysdark.com. The Year of the Dragon will kick off with the annual Lunar New Year Parade next Friday, February 9th at 6 p.m. on Park Center Drive in downtown Summerlin. Festivities also include traditional dragon and lion dances, fan dancers, stilt walkers, and more. Find out all the details for this free community celebration at summerlin.com under events. That's summerlin.com under events. The nonprofit organization, There Is No Hero in Heroin Foundation of Las Vegas, is hosting its free annual Recon Recovery Conference featuring former Miss USA Tara Conner next Saturday, February 10th, with workshops at 9 a.m., keynote speaker at 1:30 p.m., and resource fair at 2:30 at the UNLV Student Union, 4505 South Maryland Parkway. Find out more information about the organization and the conference at TINHIH.org. That stands for There Is No Hero in Heroin, TINHIH.org. The inaugural Micro Business Summit to help small business owners with fewer than 10 employees and future entrepreneurs is happening on Saturday, February 24th from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Las Vegas City Hall. This event is sponsored by GoDaddy, the City of Las Vegas, Workforce Connections, and Bank of Nevada, and it's free to attend for entrepreneurs, but registration is required. Find out more information or register to attend at bit.ly/MBSummitLV. That stands for Micro Business Summit, so bit.ly/MBSummitLV. Or go to workforceconnections.org for more information, workforceconnections.org. And Make-A-Wish Southern Nevada is holding their 22nd annual Walk for Wishes fundraising event on World Wish Day, Saturday, April 27th, with 8 a.m. registration and the walk and run starting at 8:30 at Town Square, Las Vegas. Sign up or find out more information at wish.org/snv/walk. That's wish.org/snv/walk.